Introducing Nick Earls, who wasn't a teacher in a former life but a medico before getting into writing, and then published lots of books for adults, and now the first in a trilogy for kids, Word Hunters.
Yes, yes. And one of the things that was very much in my mind at the early stages that the ideas behind the book were nagging at me was I kept saying to myself, you're not an expert. You don't know about primary school children. You don't have a PhD in etymology. You're not a teacher. You don't know these things. So I kind of held it at arm's length for a while. But I love history and I love language and I love telling stories. And there was this way that I could bring all these things together and have a really exciting time doing it. So in the end, I just couldn't resist. I might have written 15 books before this that are hardly like this book at all, but I really just couldn't stop myself in the end.
Have you got kids of your own, Nick?
I do now. I've got a son who recently turned 3, so it's not as though I've got a child in this kind of readership, but having my son in my life has kind of taken me back to the very early reading that I did and made me think about my first experiences with books and sitting there with my parents reading, and my parents would be reading big fat novels with no pictures in them and very fine type, and I'd be sitting there with something like Green Eggs and Ham sounding out the words and reading it all aloud, and I'd watch them read and I'd think, not only do they not have to say it, but their lips aren't even moving. One day I want to be that good. I want to be such a good reader that I can read without my lips moving.
You can remember consciously thinking that as a small young child.
I can remember the sitting room that we were in our house in Ireland, each of my parents with a fat novel, my father sitting there with his legs crossed at the ankles and the novel on his lap, my sister next to me with a book not quite reading yet, and me temporarily impressed with myself because I could pick out the words in Green Eggs and Ham, but then looking at my parents and thinking, that's how the big people do it.
Well, Word Hunters got me thinking about adults thinking about kids' engagement with language. So it's really fascinating that you're telling now about yourself as a kid thinking about adults' engagement with language. So once upon a time, there were grammar books, and some of them are quite entertaining, and some of those have been republished latterly, partly as fascinating curiosities, I think, but also because they were full of rules and instructions on language structure and proper usage. Then all of that went out of the window. But more lately, there's been a re-engagement with language, like Ursula Dubosarsky and Toby Riddle's Word Spy books. I don't know whether you're familiar with them, but they include games and puzzles, and they're meant to be fun, and they provide a form of pleasure through word play. And now here's this adventure story, it's going to be a trilogy even, about language and about etymology in particular, telling the history of English as an entertainment.
Yes, and that was one of the things where I thought, can I pull this off? Can anyone pull this off? I can remember one time I was hiking with some friends one weekend. We just climbed a mountain. We'd come back down from the mountain. We were cooking dinner and someone said that something was okay. And someone said, where did okay come from? I mean, what does the expression even mean anyway? And I happened to know. So, and you know, that's just a moment of nerd glory that only comes along once in a generation. So I had to stop everyone cooking the food and doing whatever they were doing while I spent the next 20 minutes turning my friends into my audience and going through the history of the word okay. And some of those things were in my head and I found it hard to shake them. And part of me wanted to write about them, but part of me said, you don't know how to write about those. You aren't an expert in language. What you do is tell stories. But then I thought, is there a way that I can tell a story and incorporate that as part of it? And that's when I came up with the idea of an adventure story with the main characters being blasted into the past to the different stages in the etymology of a word and having to pin the word down in the past for it to continue to exist in the present.
Yeah.
And I guess what I hoped was that if I got it right, I could create characters that people might connect with. I mean, characters have been a big part of my writing for adults and teenagers, and I thought, I hope I can create characters that the readers will want to follow and read about, and an adventure story that's worth following for its own sake. But woven in around that and underpinning that adventure is the history of the language that we speak. And in the process of doing the research behind that, the whole history of English started to look a lot more exciting to me. And, you know, that, as you've said, with the grammar manuals and all that kind of thing, and they haven't been around forever. And as someone who went to school in, started school in the late 60s and finished school in 1980, there's this sort of idea that grammar as it was around forever, and that spellings as they are were around forever. And then you realize that people had to make these things up. And it was when printing came along in the 15th century that so many of these things came along, commas and semicolons and conventions came along where there hadn't been conventions before, and then those conventions became rules, and the language is not a static thing. And I guess I've learned far more about it in the last 2 years than I'd known about it before then, and the story of our language is a much more exciting thing than I'd realised.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you a question about that structure. But I don't want you to take offence or anything. I'm not trying to stir you up by asking this question, you see. But when I read it, I know as an adult that all that stuff is incredibly fascinating. You know, the history of the language and the history that it tells, the multicultural history that it tells over time. But are kids interested in that? And in a sense, you're kind of saying, well, no, they're interested in an adventure story, but your adventure story has this educational objective, doesn't it? And
yes,
that's a kind of a trickery, isn't it?
I think it's a victimless kind of trickery. If kids pick this up and read it as an adventure story and come away excited about language, I hope I've opened their eyes to something. And I think what I wanted to do with this was, I wanted to see if I could pull off the rather difficult balancing act of creating something that might work on different levels for people who came at it with different reading skills and different reading interests and different levels of life maturity, so that if an 8-year-old comes to this who is not the biggest reader but might like an adventure story, there's an adventure story there. And maybe some of the other stuff will click with them, maybe it won't. But if a 12-year-old comes to this and that 12-year-old is a big reader and they're interested in language, then that's the stuff that they'll get into. So it was a chance to explore a lot of ideas, but not every idea has to land in every brain that reads this book for the book to work, I hope.
Right. Well, it's a family saga also, isn't it? As well as this time-travelling adventure. And the main structural device is a concrete example of the historical connection, of things fitting and connecting in certain ways and places back in time, right?
Yes. So Lexi and Al, who are 12-year-old twins, find an old dictionary in their school library during renovations, and when they open it, there's something glowing there, and when they touch it, it sends them back into the past to the various stages in one possible evolution of the word hello. And, you know, hello is very much up for debate in terms of its origins. And over the course of the trilogy, there will be some words where the origins are really clear and very well established, and others where they're not as well established, but there were options that I could take that would let me tell a great story, and that might be quite true. And what I wanted to find was words that evolved in interesting ways and in different ways across the trilogy, so we can see words coming in from different places and their meanings altering in different ways in different circumstances, and words that will allow my characters to drop into exciting times in history and see exciting things happen and work out how to get through them and out the other side. So there's that mechanism taking them back to the origin of each word and then getting home again. But as you said, there's a family side to it as well, because their grandfather hasn't been around for a long time. And as they go with this, they start to wonder if he might be part of this too.
Mm. Well, I don't want to spoil the mystery,
no.
And I won't do that. But some of the dates where these twins go back to in time. Some of the dates and places are important in terms of the evolution, the story of English. What's the earliest one? Can you perhaps give us that much, a little snippet of the story? The earliest one, and why that?
The earliest one is one of my favourites. And what I wanted to do with these books was show some words that had changed a lot over the years. But in the midst of that, I wanted to find one that had hardly changed at all, just to show that some words are really resilient. And I started thinking, what would be a good example of that? A word that goes back a long way. And then I remembered a documentary that I'd seen on TV about the excavations that had started in 1911 of the ruins of a city called Hattusha in eastern Turkey, the capital of the empire of Hatti, the empire of the Hittites, more than 3,000 years ago. And so it had been in ruins for a long time. The empire was no more. It had almost been erased from history. And then in 1911, a German archaeologist shifted one stone aside and discovered the archive of the empire, discovered 30,000 tablets with cuneiform writing on them. And so suddenly they had the whole story of the place that they'd known practically nothing about before. And they jumped in and started trying to read these and couldn't quite work it out and assumed it must be an Akkadian language, but it didn't fit with any of the Akkadian languages. And they kept trying different ways of translating these tablets. And then they noticed two characters sitting next to each other. And they thought, these characters occur in a lot of languages around that time. And the first one makes the sound wat, and the second character makes the sound tar. So this is the word watar, watar. What would that mean? And they thought, surely it couldn't be water. And surely this couldn't be an Indo-European language. But then they tried it out. And when they tested it as an Indo-European language, it turned out to be one, a lost Indo-European language from over 3,000 years ago, in which the symbols watar make up the word water. So there is water lost underground for 3,000 years on a cuneiform tablet in a language that we've forgotten about. The word is almost the same now as it was in a lost empire in eastern Turkey 3,000 years ago. And I had to send my characters there.
Yeah. Well, just finally, Nick, can you tell about the curious dictionary? I mean, about the name of the book that these Yes. twins find in the library, and whether it's a kind of a play on words itself. So is it the dictionary itself that's curious, or is it a dictionary for the curious?
Or is it a dictionary that's a very odd kind of dictionary and using yes. that version of curious? And I think I wanted it to be all of those things. And as the characters Lexi and Al learn, this is a document that's started out at the very beginning of English about 1,500 years ago and started out in different form then but adapted over time to become the thing that it is now, so that in each era when it's found, it looks like just a slightly out of date but authoritative dictionary, but it evolves over time. So it's an odd dictionary, it's a dictionary for the curious, but it's a dictionary that grows and changes its content as it goes, and that's what allows it to remain a kind of active record of the language. So yes, I can't actually explain how it's made. There's a character in the 5th century who starts it out, and the dictionary is very much at the heart of this.
Nick Earls, the author, and Terry Whitborn is the illustrator of the first book in the Word Hunters trilogy, The Curious Dictionary, from the University of Queensland Press. And off the back of last week's Lingua Franca, featuring Tiger Webb and Irina Dunn's personal stories, you're invited to write and send in your own encounter with language while on the move, whether with a foreign tongue or a new awareness of something you maybe assumed was oh so familiar. Check the website for further details. And from me, Maria Zylstra, doeg!